would like to welcome everybody to Spotlight on this wonderful Saturday. I'd like to say thank you to the recorders, John, Els, Mike, and Dennis. Thank you for recording this Spotlight interview today. And absolutely no texting in the rooms, please, during the interview or otherwise. If you have any questions, please hold your questions until the end of the interview, and then you'll be free to ask whatever you wish.
Okay.
All right, so I'm going to turn it over to John now, and John will introduce our interviewee for the day.
Well, hello, everyone. This is John Harris, a.k.a. Worthless Buckeye, No Good Rotten Aussie Dog. We're here today with Philip Morris. Philip has agreed to be our subject or our victim, whichever one you want to call it today, in this interview. I know a lot of you know Philip. He's been on the site quite a few years. He's the one that brought me on the site, so he's the one you need to blame for that. I hope you're going to enjoy this. You're going to learn a lot of things about Philip today that you didn't know. And Mr. Quiet Man, that everybody thinks Mr. Quiet, nice, polite, maybe we can change that outlook that you're holding up. All right, let's get started. Philip, let's start out there when you grew up. Tell us about where you grew up at, your family, how many's in your family, and a little bit about your childhood there.
Well, I was born in a little holler back in West Virginia called Blue Creek. Born at home in 1934. Had a family doctor, or a doctor came around the homes and did childbirth, and I was born at home in 1934, November 1934. Back then we had no electric, no telephones, no TV, no nothing up at Holler. Just us. And I'm the oldest of six kids. Had four sisters and one brother. The youngest is now 60, I think. And I am the oldest, and went to little one-room school for the first 5 years of my school in that area. Had a one-room school. My dad had went to that school. I went to that school. My wife went to that school. All my family went to that school for 5 years. And just right now, I was in West Virginia, my house is inside of that school, and just about last August, they demolished that school. It is no longer standing.
Oh, that's awful. That tore down some memories for you there. Well, Philip, you were born just about the time of the Depression. We were starting to come out of the Depression. How was it for you growing up back in those days?
Yeah, my dad worked for the WPA, I think, back then. And they built roads back home and did things. And we didn't have much, you know. I think we had a four-room house. Nobody in the community had, there's only two automobiles in the community. My uncle owned one of them, and another man lived in the community owned another one. And like I said, we had no electric, we had springs for water, had no telephones. The closest grocery store was about a mile out of dirt road, we used to go back and forth to the store three or four times a day, barefooted, summertime, just to see if we could see people and see what was going on in the world. And a few times, me and my cousin, we'd get along the road, we'd see our uncle coming, and he'd be going the opposite direction of us. We'd turn around and act like we was going that way, so he'd pick us up in the car, and we could ride in the car. We'd get over there, and somebody come along the other way, we'd hitchhike, flag him around, just get to ride in the car.
Oh, yes, back in those days for kids like us growing up without vehicles in the family, that was a big treat to get a ride in a car. So let's move on a little bit farther down the road there, Philip. When you were about 5 years old, you told us a story about a barn there. Would you like to cover that?
Yeah, you know, me and my cousin, we was about the same age. He's about 6 months younger than me, or maybe 8 or 9, something like that. But we went, this neighbor, he wanted us, he played guitar and sang back in them days. We didn't know nobody else could do that, so we thought that was a big deal. But he wanted us to go down to my cousin's house and borrow him some matches so he could light his cigarettes. He didn't have no matches. And we went down and got him a handful and brought him back, and he sang us 3 or 4 tunes on the guitar, played the guitar and sang to us. And so we decided, we kept 3 or 4 of the matches for our own use. We was about 5 years old. So we went down to my cousin's house, and we decided to go out in the barn and build a fire. It had a great big 2-story barn. So we went out there and stall where they fed the cows and manger, whatever they call it. We built a fire there. Well, not realizing that the whole barn was going to go up in flames. So all of a sudden, the barn caught on fire out of control. We run to the woods and hid up on top of the hill and said, we'll throw on top of him wants to burn. But for a long time, that threat, people would see us, they called us barn burners. Was our nickname for about 5 or 10 years after that.
So you were the first well-known arsonist in West Virginia. Maybe I need to look up that in the archives of the newspaper and see what we can find about that, Philip, and share that with everybody on the site. That's going to be a little task I'll perform this week if I can do that. Now, let's go back to that barn burning there. When it was all said and done and you were caught, did Dad end up taking a belt to you?
Well, my dad, we was here in the woods. My dad ran us down, and he caught me, and I had a pair of little old handcuffs like, you know, cowboys and police carried. And my dad took me down to my grandmother and handcuffed me to the bed. So he decided what to do with me, he said. Of course, now, you know, he'd be in jail for child abuse, but back then it wasn't too bad. But he went off somewhere, and my grandma turned me loose. But we did get a good whipping over it, both of us.
So there you go, folks. Philip's first incarceration started at the age of 5. Let's hope that didn't happen any longer. You were lucky. You lucky grandma was there to turn you loose, Philip. Let's move on a little bit again. Just before you started school, we talked about this there earlier, Philip. You hadn't started school, but you wanted to go to school. Tell everybody about that. What went?
Yeah, about the same period of time, like I said, in a one-room school there in a community, in the 5 grades, and all the kids went to school. And so they'd come September, and I think back then school started day after Labor Day. And my sister and brother didn't start school. They weren't even born yet, so, but my cousin, his brother and sister was all older than him. So everybody, all the kids we played with started school, so. We went up there and they wouldn't let us go to school because they said we were too young. And so we just, the old school had a underpinning around the school, our tin. So me and my cousin, we'd get us a broomstick and he'd go around one side and I'd go around the other side beating on that tin underpinning while the teacher was trying to teach school. And she'd come out and run us off, and then a day or two later, we went back and did the same thing. We did it 3 or 4 times, so finally she got a hold of our parents, and they put a stop to that. And, you know, we were sort of banned from the school ground at that time by our parents and the teacher. And so then, but then after I started school, I didn't want to go all the time.
Yeah, you wish that ban would have lasted a little longer, don't you? All right, you finally got into school. You were a pretty mischievous boy, weren't you, Philip? You couldn't stay quiet. You had to keep things going. Everybody thinks Philip's a quiet guy, but back in Philip's younger day, he was pretty much a class clown, carried on. Let's get up to the 8th grade, Philip, and tell us about your English teacher and what she did to
you. Well, when I started junior high school, it was the first year they had they started junior high football. 7th, 8th, and 9th grade had football teams, and the 10th, 11th, 12th had senior high. And But I was in the football class, and that's sort of mischievous. Of course, football boys back then didn't get away with stuff like they do nowadays, but we had this young teacher, English teacher. She just got out of college, about 22 years old or something like that, and we were in her class. She kept getting after me, doing this and that, shooting paper wad, doing different things. And so, one day she called me in at the class and said, "Now, Philip," said, "you're just causing a lot of confusion here." She said, "If you'll sit outside of my door and in a chair and behave yourself and guard the door, I'll give you a C for the next 9 weeks if you'll just do that." So I said, "Okay, Aunt Faith, Miss Campbell," and I said, "I'll do that." So for 9 weeks, I stood outside her door and guarded the door, and she gave me a C in English.
So you were the first door guard hall monitor in the state of West Virginia. That is pretty good, Phil. All right, let's move on. You're out of school now, and you decided to join the military. What age was that at, Philip? And what branch did you just finally decide to go into?
Well, when I was 16, 17 years old, I had two or three friends that got drafted and went to Korea and got killed, and I'd known a couple of three people that was young and got killed in World War II. So when Korean War broke out, then I decided that the day I was 17, I was going to join the military and go into service and do my duty. So when I was 17, I was still in school, but I think it was 10th grade, I think. I decided to go down and join the military, so I went and joined the Air Force and brought the papers home. Mom, she wouldn't sign the papers. She said, "No, I'm not going to sign the papers. You go over and get killed, and I'd have to live with the rest of my life, so I'm not going to sign the papers for you to go into service." So I thought, I'll just quit school, and that'll help her decide to get rid of me, sign papers, get me out of her hair. So I quit high school and fooled around, worked a couple of odd jobs, service station stuff. But I told my mother, I said, "Now, the day I'm 18, I'm going to go." She said, "Well, that'll be up to you." So the morning of my 18th birthday, I was sitting on the recruiting steps when they opened. And, well, like I said, on my 18th birthday, I caught my cousin Ryan downtown. He was working. I was sitting there when the recruiting sergeant came in at 8 o'clock. And I said, "Well, I'm back." Of course, I'd visited him several times. So I signed up. Next day, I went and took my physical, and away I went.
Was this your first time away from home, Philip, to actually leave home and leave the state? And where were you stationed at?
Well, I left home. It was the first time I'd ever been away from home. I guess the second time I'd ever been out of West Virginia. The first time I didn't hardly remember. I was a young, three years old or something. My dad and mom went to Indiana to see his sister, but yeah, caught a troop train in Becky, West Virginia, and went to San Antonio, Texas. 2 days on a troop train.
Ooh, I don't envy that ride. That was a long ride, especially in those days on a train. So you finish your basic training, and you were an airplane mechanic in the Air Force, weren't you, Philip?
Yeah, when I finished basic training, I went to Aircraft and Engine Mechanics School at Wichita Falls, Texas for 6 months.
Where were some of the stations, bases you were stationed at while you were in the military?
Well, I was stationed at Tachikawa, Japan, and stationed at Fusa, Japan, stationed at West Palm Beach, Florida. Stationed at Kelly Air Force Base in San Antonio, Texas. Stationed at McGuire Air Force Base in Trenton, New Jersey. Wrightstown. And I did TDY at a couple bases. I was TDY one time up to, went to school at Seattle Washington, McCord Air Force Base. And I guess that's about it.
Okay. TDY, for those who don't know what that is, that's temporary duty assignment. So you spent, what, 4 years in the Air Force, Philip, and you decided that was enough and you came out?
Yeah, I spent 4 years, and I thought, well, I'd get out and I'd go back to West Virginia, but I got out and I went back home and stayed about a month or month and a half, and I didn't like the outside life, so I joined the National Guard when I got out. Came home, I joined the National Guard for about a month, then I decided I'd reenlist, so I reenlisted, went back in the military.
Okay. You were back in this time, but you didn't get to stay for your whole enlistment. Towards the end of your enlistment, you started having problems with your vision. You want to tell us about that?
Well, yeah, I reenlisted for 6 years, and I went to West Palm Beach, Florida, station. Then I got transferred. Then I went to Fusa, Japan. And I was over there working 12 hours on, 12 hours off. 1 month would be night shift, 1 month day shift. I'm working out on a flight line, and I got to having trouble with seeing of a night. And I went to the doctor over there, and I told him I needed my glasses changed, and so they made me an eye appointment, and went back and checked, and they said, nah, wasn't nothing wrong with me, just didn't need new glasses, I'm just going back to work. So I did, and then about 3 months later, or 2 months, they called me over to the hospital, a specialist came through, and so he checked me, and they took me out of the chair where they checked me in, put me in a wheelchair, and took me over to the hospital and put me to bed.
Yeah, back in those days, they really didn't know what retinitis pigmentosa was, and you kind of baffled them. They didn't know what to do with you, did they? So what happened when they took you to the hospital?
Well, they put me in bed there, and they I asked them, you know, what was wrong. Now, they didn't really know much about what was wrong, but they said I couldn't go back to the barracks and or anything, and I'd just worked the night before out on flight line. And so about 2 weeks later, they said, we're sending you back to the States. They said, you can't go back to Berry. I said, well, we'll pack my bags now. We'll have them packed. You can't go back to Berry. So, a couple weeks, I was on orders, and they put me on the hospital plane and flew me back to Travis Air Force Base in California.
And once you got there, they kept you quite a while, didn't they?
Well, they kept me in Travis for 2 weeks, and nobody wouldn't tell me nothing. And I didn't know what was going on, what was wrong, nothing. So they asked me if I wanted to go to, after it was Travis a couple weeks, they asked me if I wanted to go to Walter Reed or Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio, so, the hospital. So I chose Wright-Patterson in Dayton, Ohio, and so they took me there and put me in the hospital. And I'd been in the hospital maybe 2 months in Dayton, Ohio. And a doctor called me down one day and said that I had this rare eye disease. And they didn't know much about it. And anything about it, but wasn't nothing they could do for me, and I'd probably be totally blind in 10 years, and they was going to give me a medical discharge. So I'd done, at that time, I'd done been in the hospital maybe 4 months.
Boy, it's a long time for them not to understand what was going on with you. Now, you're discharged from the military for your eye disease, Philip, and, you know, here you had no training before military service, yet you were an airplane mechanic. It's kind of hard to get a job as an airplane mechanic when you're blind on the outside. Were you pretty anxious and worried about what you might do once you get out to earn a living?
Yeah, well, after when like about 4 months, they said they were going to discharge me. Well, then they fooled around and kept me in the hospital 2 months. I like them one day being in the hospital 6 months. And they finally discharged me and sent me home. And so I filed a claim with the VA and went to the VA and they didn't do nothing. They said, you know, there wasn't nothing they could do for me. So my wife's aunt, or no, my wife's niece, worked for the Vocational Rehabilitation in the state of West Virginia, so she got me on that vending stamp program.
That's pretty good. Now, before we start to cover you and Donna there, before you heard about RP, had you ever known anybody in the family that had the eye disease or had any problems with blindness?
My mom had had a brother that was blind from the time he was born, practically. He never did go to school or nothing. But they never did know what was wrong with him. You know, back then, I don't know if he ever went to an eye doctor. Not just when he was a kid, he couldn't see, and he just never did go to school or nothing. And at that time, you know, even, well, when I went home, I'd never heard of retinitis pigmentosa when the doctor told me I had it. But then after I was diagnosed, and a couple, 3 years later, they said that was what was wrong with my brother. They diagnosed him.
Okay. Now, she just had one brother. Any other your brothers or sisters or your children or grandchildren today have this eye disease?
Later years, my sister, she's third down from me, developed RP. I found out about it when she was about 45 years old. I don't know how long she had known it, if she didn't tell it or what, but she lived in Alabama. And but as it is now, her and I, and mom's brother was the only three in the family that we know of has it or ever had it.
That's good. I'm glad it disappeared out of the family. The same thing with my family. Hopefully it's gone. We don't have to worry about it anymore. Now, you're out working. At what time in your life here, you're out of the military and you're working in the vending stands? When did you decide to get married? Was it while you were in the military or after you came out?
Well, I got married while I was still in the military. And, like I told you, I've known my wife from the time she was born. I tell her I used to change her diapers, but she don't believe me. But I got married just before I got out of the military.
Okay. Had you already found out about your eye disease at this time, or it was after you'd gotten married?
It was probably about the same time that I got married that I found out, actually, that what was wrong with my eyes.
Well, Sure got a good lady that stuck with you all these years there. And how many kids, Philip, do you have now? You know, you got quite a few kids, some grandkids, and a new one just added to the family, haven't you?
Yeah, we have 5 kids. Oldest one's a girl, and then we had a set of twins. They're 46 years old now, boy and a girl. Then we had a boy, and then the baby's a girl, and then we've got 8 grandchildren and 1 great-great-grand boy.
Boy, I can't wait for that day. I don't. I can wait. I don't want to be that old to get to him, but I want some great grandkids. So you've got all these children. You're working out in the vending machines. Was it pretty rough for you there with all the kids? I'm sure it had to be. And you're raising a good sized family like that on the income of a vending stand. So how was that for you?
Well, I did pretty good. I had one of the best, at that time, I had the best vending stand in the state of West Virginia. I had a coffee shop downtown, right in the middle of downtown Charleston. Just a small place, like had 4 tables and like 10 stools. But it was a pretty busy little place. I had 3 sighted girls work for me. Well, my wife worked for me one time for a year, and then she got mad and quit, said I was too rough on her. But, I've done pretty well at that, for 11 years in that.
Well, of course you're going to be rough on her. You're the boss at work, you know. She's not used to that. You know, she's the boss at home, and you hear she's at work with you, and you're telling her what to do. No woman can stand that. So, After your 11 years of your vending machines, what did you do after that?
Well, we lived out in the country. I didn't have a bus service, and my wife was having to drive me to work every morning 12 miles, come back and get me a vending. So I got mad one day, and I said, I'm going to retire. My doctor, he was a customer of mine in the coffee shop, too, my doctor. He had told me 3 or 4 years before that I could go on Social Security if I wanted to, but I told him I didn't want to do that, so. But anyhow, I got upset. I was having trouble keeping help, and my eyes was getting worse all the time, and, gradually. And so I just, one day about 1 o'clock, I said, I just went up to Social Security and signed up for Social Security, and about 2 weeks later, they proved it. Got a letter said it was on Social Security. So I quit the vending stand program and retired.
Oh, stayed at home, took it easy. Back in those days, it was so much easier to get Social Security. It wasn't such a big battle. So you're retired and you're staying at the house and. Eventually, you get some help from the VA. How many years after you had quit work was it before you was eligible to get your VA benefits?
It was 20, probably 20 years more. Yeah, more than 20 years, about 24 years. But after I retired, I fooled around this and that and did odd stuff. I could, still see to get around and things, but I just peddled around doing this and that and something else until finally I got a pension from the VA finally.
Oh, good. Things got a little bit better after that came along, and you went to blind rehab training, and is this where you heard about computers when you were at blind rehab for your rehab?
Yeah, the VA had tried to get me to go to blind rehab for 20 years or 15 years or something, and I wouldn't go, and I never did have a cane. My sight had gotten so bad, I was using a broomstick for a cane. I was there in the hospital one day, and they asked me. I told them they'd laugh. They thought that was funny, but I used a broomstick for funny in 1987. I finally agreed to go to rehab, and so They sent me up to Connecticut for 14 weeks to blind rehab.
Yeah, you went through all the learning skills for to get around, how to learn how to get out in traffic and manipulate buildings and all that, and you also took some training inside the home, stuff like that, in the rehab center. When did you decide to go back and learn about computers?
Well, when they first started issuing computers, I put in for one, and then they wouldn't give me one, and they sent me back up to Connecticut for 2 weeks for an Arkenstein reader machine. And I got that Arkenstein reading machine, and then maybe a year later, I applied for, well, the first time they turned me down for computer school, they asked me what I was going to do with a computer, and I told them I just wanted to play with. And they didn't sit very well with them, and they, but I said, well, I've got about 30 or 40 friends that's sighted, got computers, and I asked all them what they did with them, they said played with them, so I said, I guess that's what I wanted to do with them, but that wasn't a good enough reason to get one.
No, they kind of tend to frown on that, which a lot of the vets, you know, with the sparse training they do give us, it's basically what most of them do. They come home, they don't even use the computer because they don't remember what they even did to turn it on half the time. It's really a shame, the training they give us. Well, while you're at the computer training, you met probably one of the nicest guys you'd ever run into in your life there in Connecticut, didn't you?
Yeah, I was up at the computer school, and I think I just about completed. And one day there, I run into a guy named John Harris.
Yeah, his rest is history. And you came home and you joined For the People, and you talked me into coming in several times. You told me about For the People before I took the plunge. All right, Philip, you're back home from computer training, and this time you're pretty much involved in the Blinded Veterans Association. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I'd got elected. I was the state president of the Blinded Veterans Association, and I was the president for, I think, 5 or 6 years. 6 years, I believe. In that, and I spent, you know, quite a bit of time that.
Yeah, everybody sure liked you too. And if you hadn't decided to step down, you'd still be the president. That's how well liked you were. All right, Philip, you've stepped down from BVA. You're retired. You're enjoying life, and You buy a place down in Florida, and you're down there for a while, and you decide to come back home for a while, and then you go back again, and now you're back down there permanent. So how's things going? Do you love Florida? Does it feel like home yet, or is West Virginia still in your blood?
Well, you know, I never was one to miss home too much. When I first went to service, I remember back, guys couldn't wait to get out of boot camp and take a furlough. I didn't take first time I came back home was a year later. Before I came back home when I first went to service, and I didn't get homesick. So I started coming down here. Well, I wanted to move down here in the early 70s. My wife wouldn't do it, but we started coming down here in the motor home for the winters, and then, like I say, about a 2 or 3 years ago, bought a double wide mobile home down here. And so she's been, then, so now, well, she changed her mind. She decided she wanted to move down here. So now we bought a house, and we've changed our residence to Florida now. I've got car license, and she's changed the driver's license. And I guess officially now we're Florida residents, and Now, I don't really miss home, West Virginia.
Well, you're still a West Virginia hillbilly, even though you're a Floridian now. Okay, we skipped one thing, Philip. I forgot all about this. A lot of folks don't know this about you, but you and Donna, for quite a few years, did a lot of singing in churches, on the radio, and on television. Tell us how you got interested in that, Philip.
Well, back when I was a Vintage Time program, I'd met some people, but when I was telling this guy about I was going to retire because my sight was getting so bad, and so he worked at a music store, of course, and he taught me how to buy a guitar to give me something to do when I retired. So I bought a guitar and took that thing home, and wife about put me and the guitar both out of the house, but I plunked around on that thing, and I never did really learn to play it, but my two sons learned. They picked it right up. They was young. But me and her got to singing, and one day a preacher heard us, and at that time we started going to church, and that was another thing probably that we skipped in my life. Back when I first got out of the military, I'd got to drinking pretty heavy because on account of losing my eyesight and this and that. So, but in 1966, I'd quit drinking. Haven't drank anything since. But we started, the preacher said, well, you can sing a song in church Sunday. So we did, and then the one thing led to another, and the first thing you know is singing two or three times a week. And one time we sang 29 nights out of 30 in church, in revivals. And we probably sang at 200 or 300 funerals, and we had a radio broadcast for 3 years with a preacher. And we did some television with a couple preachers.
Yeah, a lot of folks don't know that about Philip. A great voice. I wish we had some really, really good recordings back in those days that could have saved some really fine quality stuff we could showcase there. We've got some stuff of Philip's that he's done. But, you know, you went back to talking about your drinking days. I missed that. I forgot all about that, Philip. Back in those days when you used to drink, you put a few away in your time. You used to run around with a local DJ, and while you were doing this, you met quite a few country artists at that time, didn't you? You tipped a few glasses with those guys. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, across the street from where my restaurant was, there was a radio station, country radio station, and the guy that owned it, he was a regular customer of mine, but back in them days, they had a DJ convention down in Nashville every year, and for all the DJs in the United States. And I guess really what it was payola. You go down there and they wind you and dine you for a week to get you to play the record. So this friend of mine, I've got pretty good friends this DJ, so he was going to a DJ convention. So he asked me, why won't you go? And I said, well, you know, I can't get in down there. He said, well, yeah. He said, talked to Ed Clinton, and Ed said he'll give you a certified letter that you're a DJ, and you can go, so then you'll go down. So I mentioned, the guy said, yeah, I'll give you a letter. So he gave me a letter, said I was a DJ, and so me and this friend of mine went down to Nashville, and we wined and dined with all the stars for a week. And, I met several people. Bobby Bear, Del Reeves, and Buck Owens, and the Buckaroos, all the Buckaroos. In fact, one night at dinner down there, we sat at the next table beside Buck and the Buckaroos and had dinner. But, it was pretty, that was in the wild days.
back in your wild days, sowing your oats still. That would have to be neat, meeting all the artists and hobnobbing with them and everything. Even though you might not remember a lot of it, a lot of it might have been hazy back in those days from the drinking. But I would have loved to have met Don Rich. I liked Don Rich more than I did Buck Owens. So, all right, we covered all that and your music and everything. And now you're living in Florida and you're on For the People. And a lot of folks on the site know that Phillip's one of the board members of For the People, and he's also a moderator. A really good friend of mine and a lot of folks on the site. Phillip, tell us, how do you feel about For the People? What's it mean to you?
Well, it's been, it's been great for me. When I first heard about it, I'd heard so much about talk sites on, computers and things, and I, first year or two I heard about it, I didn't want to get on, but then finally I joined up and it's really been I've really enjoyed it and learned a lot of tricks and things with the computer, whatever, so I really enjoyed it. I'd recommend it to anybody.
Great site, a lot of good folks. We sure have learned a lot on here since both of us have joined. Made a lot of really good friends, a lot of good friends. Hey, Philip, tell us a little bit something about you. What's your favorite type of music?
Well, my favorite type is old country. It's old country and gospel, bluegrass gospel especially.
Yeah, we're basically mostly the same style of music we both like. Your favorite color, Philip? You were sighted and you got to see colors. What was your favorite color?
I don't know if I ever had a favorite color or not.
No favorite color. How about your favorite actor?
I never was really into movies even when I was young and could see. I never really was into TV or movies either. I never was into that very much. But I liked John Wayne and Humphrey Bogart.
Yeah, John Wayne's one of my all-time favorites also. All right, well, thank you, Philip, for doing this interview with us today. I hope a lot of people have learned things about you that they didn't know before. And so we're going to open it up and give it to Jennifer and let her take some questions from the folks here on the site. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Well, I'd like to add my own comments that, Phil, you've been a wonderful addition to the site. We all thank you for your efforts and energy given to the board in helping manage the site. But you're also a heck of a lot of fun. And just great knowing you and thank you. And anyone who'd like to ask a question or make a comment, the floor's open.
Philip, what's your best type of food that you like? I mean, what really turns you on? I know you got a lot of home cooking. We've talked about that, some of the stuff. But you like catfish, don't you?
Yeah, I practically live on catfish nowadays, but that's a problem I got. I like about all food. But the only food I don't like is lasagna. I never could get to like the lasagna.
May I say something to Philip? Philip, I don't know you personally, but we got a lot of things in common, especially the area we live in. But when I first got on the chat room, I heard you, I talked with you along with some of the others, and I was impressed by the tone of your voice and the sincerity of your voice. I mentioned now and then about hearing some good voices on this chat room, and you're one of them. And let me just say, welcome to Florida.
Thank you, James. Thank you.
Well, Well, since everyone's being so quiet, I'll be a little greedy with the key. One thing I admire very much about Philip is he's a man of his convictions. He's not afraid to speak his mind, even when it's not popular. To me, that's high praise, Philip.
Well, Philip, I just wanted to tell you how much I've enjoyed knowing you and how welcome you make new people, and me in particular, feel when I first came on the site, and it's been great.
Thanks, Susie.
Well, I'd like to tell you, Philip, you're one of my very favorite people on the site, and I am blessed that you are a friend of mine, and I love you dearly, and so do most people that know you, and I want to thank you for being my friend.
And also, Philip, when I first got on here, I think when I got in the veterans rooms, I think a lot of times you and I wound up together, and we've done a lot of talking, and I've enjoyed listening to
it. Good night, veteran.
Learn from you. And I think you're one of the smallest guys on here.
Thank you, Willie. Lyndall. I hope I hope that I don't offend anyone or do anything that I shouldn't. I try not to. Of course, we all make mistakes at times. Maybe say something sometimes I shouldn't.
Does anyone else have a question or a comment for Philip?
Well, I was going to ask you, but that wasn't too tough a decision for you to make to move to Florida between your new wife with having to travel back and forth. I know with the family being in West Virginia and you being in Florida, it would be tough, but I think the future will probably be better weather for you, wouldn't it?
I hope so, Willie. The older my wife gets, the less she wants to drive in the snow and the bad weather and cold. And so I just hope that we've made the right decision in this move.
I would like to ask Philip just one question, and I've got to get off. I'm the dishwasher in my house since I can't do a lot of other things, but I can do that, so I got to go wash dishes. But Philip, have you ever thought about burning any more barns?
No, James, I sort of learned a lesson about that, and I've always been afraid of fire ever since. At around home, we burned brush piles. My wife, she'd burn them, but I've always been afraid of fire.
Well, thank you, and I'm going to get off. But Philip, it was very enjoyable hearing your life story, and best luck to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, best of luck, Phil. I hope to spend many hours talking to you on Florida people. Really enjoy you. I love you, buddy.
When you get tired of barn burner there, Philip, we could make you renegade DJ.
Yeah.
Well, I hope everybody enjoyed the interview and learned a little more about Philip than you knew already. And he's got great character, great taste. He said, I was probably the nicest guy you ever met.
Well, Philip, we won't tell everyone how the friendship almost came to a screeching halt when you didn't bring enough chicken in your pockets, will we?
And, Philip, we also won't tell anybody that you said that because John is interviewing you. And you couldn't say anything but that.
Yes. Welcome to Florida, Philip. I hope maybe...
Well, I want to thank John very much for providing us with an excellent interview. And Philip, thank you so much for being put in the spotlight today. Thank you to Els and Dennis for recording today and so often for us all. Everyone who asked questions and is here to listen and learn, thank you all. And take care.